plan is to separate you from your loved ones. The plan is for more failed marriages and failed relationships. The plan is to get you to muzzle your children with Sharia-style oxygen-inhibiting bacteria-ridden face muzzles. The goal here is, and the plan here is, to wipe the faces off of their interactions daily. No more facial expressions. To keep them in bubbles. To keep you away from your grandma and grandpa and your aunt and your uncle and your mom and your dad who are dying in the hospital because they're getting the preferred and only treatment plan for the fake virus that they have, which is remdesivir, for example, coursing through their veins and killing them slowly with the use of ventilators combined with the deadly drugs that have failed Ebola tests and trials in Africa at the hands of Bill Gates and Tony Fauci because it killed 53% of the people that took it. The plan here is to get you to panic so greatly that you will rush your kids to the front of the line, fight physically if necessary, to make sure that they get that needle in that arm and that they are injected with that mRNA or nanotechnology and graphene oxide so that they can be turned into some transhuman invention. Do you agree with that? I mean, I'm getting pissed.
Of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, the disease podcast for this disease world. As always, I'm Andy Pupa.
And I'm Brett Bales. And was that a recording of me in class? Did my students sneak in a recording device?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Actually, that was actually from Brett's dissertation. That's actually how he got his doctorate. It was weird. I didn't think that's the route he would go for the big moment. But I mean, hey, he's here now, completely accredited, teaching your children. So I mean, who's to say?
I mean, there's statistics in there. There was like some big words.
That was the Truth Army that has 35,000 followers on Twitter and a lot of retweets or re-Xs. I don't even know what you call them anymore when they're resent out. But if you haven't caught on yet, this episode, we're going to dive into some weird conspiracy stuff. Because, Brett, what is the topic of conversation?
It is a disease that actually is not a disease. It's called Disease X. It is basically the next pandemic. It's a placeholder. It's what we strive to try to prevent, but probably what's coming. And it is something that the world is like trying to plan for and research towards. So as a part of that, experts typically meet, different places in the world to discuss, you know, Disease X as part of pandemic planning. So this year at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which sounds expensive, they were meeting to discuss Disease X. This also somewhat overlapped in time with several measles outbreaks that were happening both in the UK and the US. So measles is super contagious. It we've talked about this before, but the R-naught is like the average number of new cases that one infection produces. So for measles, it's like 18. So like for each person that gets infected, they will infect 18 others and so on. So it like, you know, spreads very, very quickly. And so in early 2024, both the UK Health Security Agency and the CDC reported clusters of measles cases. And so that mixed with the whole Disease X thing, because Disease X does sound like kind of nefarious, I guess.
Yeah.
It sounds cool. Mm-hmm. It's got the X in it. Elon Musk, speaking of which, may be a part of it as well, if we want to just mix all this together. Yeah. But it sparked, as things do, it sparked the imaginations of the conspiracy theory community.
Exactly.
And so we're here to talk about that, what the kind of chatter on the conspiracy theory blogosphere has been, and then talk a little bit about Disease X, some of the like scary pandemic potential pathogens that are out there. And I think it's just going to be a real fun, lighthearted
exactly.
The world of deadly viruses.
So another thing real quick, before we get into a few more takes from conspiracy theorists here, one of my favorite things that I saw on Twitter or X or whatever was someone basically when they saw Disease X was trending, they assumed people were talking about the fact that X, the social media platform, since Elon has taken over, has become a scourge on society, not unlike a disease. So I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, it's true. Elon is. He's kind of a
douchebag. Yeah, he's not winning any awards with the scientific community anytime. You'd think somebody who is so obsessed with, you know, the future and like trying to push things forward would actually be forward thinking. But alas, once you get billions of dollars, I guess you start going backwards again. But that was fun. Brett had talked about how this was being talked about in Davos recently. So here is another clip as a reaction. And this is actually from Speedy News. I think it's one of the people who was on Fox News previously or was kicked off. I'm not really sure. I feel like they get fired every couple of weeks and then they find like a new person who's like, you know, middle of the road, good looking guy, white guy who's saying absurd things. So this is
basically like the new, like a used car salesman aesthetic, or maybe like a realtor.
Yeah, for sure. It's the new Tucker Carlson look. And every once in a while they have like the slicked back hair and then they have the curly hair. It doesn't really, just changed with the trends. So this one is called Davos Deception.
Ooh. First pandemic are now hard at work preparing for the second.
There are things that are unknown that may happen. And anything happening is a matter of when, not if. And that was when, so Disease X is a placeholder for unknown disease. You may even call COVID as the first Disease X. And it may happen again.
The guy who covered up the Chinese lab leak is getting his ducks in a row for the next Chinese lab leak. We're in good hands.
So yeah, so I mean, they take these like little clips from the, you know, the discussion forum at these, you know, world conferences, and clearly the scientist here is just talking about the fact that it's more of a theory and like a placeholder.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was a good reference with, you know, COVID. Like COVID was an unknown. Any disease that is unknown and comes out is the next, and then the placeholder, and then the next one. So it makes perfect sense. But the way they interpret that is obviously they're planning to deploy this new disease on the world.
Like they did with
exactly.
COVID.
Exactly.
As if COVID was the first pandemic that's ever happened to humans in human history.
Yep.
I mean, you know, forget about all that bubonic plague and whatnot. A lot of the stuff we've actually covered on this podcast. But, you know, I guess we're just ignoring all of
that. Yeah, exactly. And one X user actually was astounded and upset the fact that they're not coming out and already saying it. But she believed that Disease X, they already know what it's going to be, and they're aware that it is bird flu. So I would just like to say Brett Bales 2024. I mean, at this point, I mean, if it is bird flu, I'm a little nervous now because Brett, you know, my co-host here, he's known the whole time. So maybe there is a global conspiracy. Maybe he's behind it. I know he's flying out of the country this week. Well, what's he doing? I have no idea. Maybe he's on this Davos spin.
I'm going to come back from Africa with a bunch of viral particles in my pockets.
Exactly.
And I'm going to just start throwing them at people.
Yeah. So we'll get into, I just want to share one more clip before we get into the real stuff behind Disease X and Brett can kind of like bring us full circle on like what that actually means and really the theory behind it and maybe what's to come with that. But this next one is by The Truth Seeker. This one has reached 105,000 people. So a few people. with a ton of re-Xs or tweets or whatever and likes. But basically, their concept with this little blurb here is that all current global events are interconnected, working together for a larger agenda aimed at achieving complete world control under a single entity. So really thinking that, you know, that new world order there is taking over. So let's listen real quick. I will cut out once he gets boring, but we're going to listen to enough of this before our ears start to bleed. So
is another technique that I call the totalitarian tiptoe. It's another perceptual mind manipulation technique. And that works like this. You are at A, and you know that your agenda is going to take the world to Z. But you know if you go from A to Z in too big a leap, the changes in society are going to be so fundamental that many people are going to look up from the game show and the sport and they're going to say, what's going on? Ethel, what's going on here? Look what they're doing. So you don't go in big leaps. You use the totalitarian tiptoe. You go as fast as you can, but not so fast that people start to see the pattern and realize that it's all connected. So you'll go from A to B and maybe go to D if you can get away with it and so on. But all the time, you're moving towards this Z goal, which is total human control.
So real quick.
God help us.
Not only God help us, but the Ethel part. I mean, man.
I wrote that down. I just wrote that down. Ethel question mark.
Like, the one thing I will say is good on them for getting somebody with a strong accent. I feel like nothing is better. Like, I feel like Australians or British people, you know, people from Europe in general can get away with saying certain things. And that...
It just sounds smart when
exactly.
they say it. If that was, like, someone from, like, Ohio, it would sound ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know... but realistically, again, they're thinking that this world order machine that's out there is slowly trying to take over the world. It's intentional that, you know, if you do it at a slow pace, that no one will notice. So, Brett, you know, we know that there's...
Yeah, that's... I like the totalitarian tiptoe, though. That's
great.
I wrote that down. Yeah, I don't know what I want to use that for, but I want to use that for something.
That sounds great. Like a t-shirt idea, you know, but it's just, it's insane. There's a bunch of other stuff on here. I went down the rabbit hole, a lot of stuff about Astrid Stuckelberger. Brett probably knows a little bit more about that. That was the guy who was supposedly the WHO whistleblower, however, never, ever worked for the WHO. So I don't know how you're a whistleblower for an organization that you never actually were employed by. So that was interesting. And then also others suggested that nanoparticle patents are behind this because more and more nanoparticles are being patented because, you know, science is getting better. And so they're pointing towards those things are directly correlated to this massive pandemic that someone, pie in the sky, you know, big name, God figure is running the world. So,
I think we are being controlled to some extent, and it's already happened and happening, and it's everyone has their phones in their pocket that's listening to products that you might want to purchase, and so you get bombarded with advertisements. So I think the goal is just to get people to like buy more crap.
It's the whole Idiocracy thing where, you know, they're all one company, and it's, you know, the most ridiculous things, like the Mountain Dew runs the world. I think we're closer to that than we are somebody like globally putting a pandemic together. But alas, Brett, let's jump into, we've now heard the nonsense and the scuttlebutt, if you will, about the totalitarian tiptoe. So let's jump into the facts of Disease X and like what that actually means.
So Disease X is not real. I, again, think the X makes it sound kind of nefarious if you're, like, prone to that kind of thinking. It's it's like what's his name, whoever you just played, says it's a hypothetical pathogen that's being used to help plan for future pandemic crises, health crises. So not to plan them, but to plan for them.
Yeah. There's a big difference there. Yeah, I really feel like just being, it's crazy that none of these people want to be prepared for anything. They're like, you know what?
Well, they do. They're prepared for, like, to, you know, when the militias want to overthrow the government and they need to, like, stock up on rations that Joe Rogan.
Yeah, exactly. They all have bomb shelters. They have 20 guns. But like when it comes to like, hey, maybe I'll get a flu shot so that I don't get the flu. That seems ridiculous.
Yeah, the nanoparticles. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, small particles. That's what most small stuff is. Yeah. So this again was part of this. I think what sparked some of this is this panel of experts that met, and their meeting was called "Preparing for Disease X." This name originated in 2018 by the World Health Organization, and it's kind of gained its own kind of like cult following in the conspiracy theory community that I was not totally aware of. I'm really glad you found those clips, both unsettling and also fun at the same time. So this is a disease that has yet to be characterized. That's the whole point of it. It is to help us think ahead. It is to encourage proactive thinking about pathogens that could cause a pandemic. And it is basically a way that we can push people's thinking forward. So they're not just thinking about a list of like prior pandemic pathogens like influenza. Think outside the box, people.
Mm-hmm.
Although influenza is a good of the bird variety. there are many different pathogens that can potentially lead to a pandemic. It's actually like pretty difficult if you're like a virus or, you know, some pathogen and you want to go from point A to point Z, you want to become a pandemic. That's giving pathogens too much credit. They don't have that kind of free will. They're just mutating. But it's like a lot has to go right for ultimately them to be spreading all over the world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of barriers in place just naturally. So we're trying to, I guess, put together what we know about past pandemics, put together like a profile of like what a likely future pandemic would be. And we know that there are certain pathogens that do have better potential than others. They may not yet be infecting humans. They may be still in the animal world. They probably are. They will often come from viral families with certain characteristics that lend themselves better to becoming pandemic pathogens. So something that is contagious, that spreads easily from person to person, is a pretty big prerequisite, I guess. And I think it's a good idea. It's a good way of, you know, getting people to start looking for undiscovered viruses, to do some virus hunting. And we need to do that ahead of time, obviously, because once it's too late, you know, it's too late. So the disease X placeholder is part of a list of actual diseases that the WHO publishes every year. They started in 2017, and they're going to be updating the 2024 list pretty soon. But this is a list of like high priority pathogens with pandemic potential, some more than others, but these are what the kind of global community is kind of focusing on. So the actual diseases that are on the list right now, COVID-19, which cat's already out of the bag there, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, which is a good one, Ebola virus, and its lesser-known cousin, the Marburg virus.
Yeah, all three of those are terrifying. Those are all hemorrhagic, like, die horrifically, awful,
like, cry tears of blood
kind of stuff. Some real end-of-the-world, post-apocalyptic-looking funness.
Yeah, basically kind of, like, liquefy your guts and you die. So, on that note, loss of fever. Is the other one, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, coronavirus, or MERS, and the OG coronavirus pandemic that was like our early wake-up call in the early 2000s, SARS, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. There's Nipah virus and Hennepiviral diseases. We've done a episode on that, so go check that out. It's a scary one that I don't think many people have heard about. Rift Valley fever. I will be spending some time in the Rift Valley next
week. That one sounds too cool. Like, it sounds like you get Rift Valley fever when you, like, really get into a groove when you're skateboarding, you know? You're just, like, chilling, enjoying life.
Or, like, when it... Or it's, like, a cultural phenomenon that's, like, spread... Like, everyone gets obsessed with over the summer.
Yeah.
The world's got Rift Valley
fever. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's like, it's the name of like some hot surfer guy or something that everyone's
It's into. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Rift Valley fever. There's Zika. Z, always a good letter. And then the Disease X placeholder, which is not actually a disease. But I thought it would be interesting to kind of go through quickly the different kind of characteristics of each of these diseases. That are actually diseases, and talk a little bit about why maybe they're on the list and why we should be concerned. So the different diseases that could lead to the next pandemic, one would be another coronavirus, which I think is very plausible. That's something I don't think a lot of people also still realize, is that there are lots, many, many, many different coronaviruses. There have been a handful that have impacted humans. But most of them are still in the animal community. But there are seven that we know that infect humans. Four of them are not really that big of a deal, kind of common cold type things that we've known about for a long time. And then starting with SARS, they start becoming problematic. So there's SARS, MERS, and then SARS-2. And we saw what it did. I was predicting at the very beginning of, like, when the COVID was first kind of making the news, global headlines, I was thinking, okay, this is going to be like another SARS, but it obviously became much more than that. So it also shows me that, you know, these coronaviruses are, they have this fairly, like, destructive potential.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds... Like, I remember that vividly, us talking about, like, this could easily just blow over. They could continue to get weaker over time, which has occurred, but that it would burn out, you know, or burn too brightly and burn out. Yeah. And it just did not react how other, you know, however the coronavirus has had in the past. And I think that's the whole thing, right? Is that, like, they mutate to a point where they're acting differently than any of the scientists would have predicted previously, but now it's on the radar. Okay, this is a series of diseases that could happen, you know, at a more alarming rate.
Yeah. So, you know, people are still bickering over whether COVID escaped from a lab or came from an animal. All the evidence that I've read points to a natural spillover event. So a zoonotic spillover, these things have happened. I mean, the bubonic plague, again, was a zoonotic spillover. And that was pre-biolab, so how did that happen? But, I mean, that's, you got to read a book to know that.
Or books.
Oh,
multiple.
Snap. Yeah.
Not going to happen.
So we know that, you know, this is just one of many pathogens that have already been jumping from animals to humans on a pretty regular basis. This is something that is not like a rare thing necessarily. But neither MERS nor COVID-19 are actually technically over. Obviously COVID is still happening, but MERS is still technically simmering. There is wastewater surveillance system data that we've talked about. Wastewater surveillance, it's pretty cool, that shows that COVID numbers are between 2 and 19 times higher than those being reported officially, which is, you know, not surprising that there's a lot more COVID than is reported.
Yeah, especially now. I mean,
yeah, because people are like, yeah, it's over. But in the wastewater, they still detect, you know, virus, and they can still, you know, get an idea of how much virus is circulating in a community. So perhaps kind of more concerning than this is that the virus is circulating still unchecked around the world, and that we could potentially have a variant that would increase the disease severity even more. So for every person that gets infected with the virus, you know, the virus hijacks your cells, it turns your cells into viral copying machines, and whenever you're copying a bunch of genetic material, there are chances for error, miscopies, and those are mutations that lead to variants. It's totally random, but you increase the probability or the chances that some mutation is going to be really bad for humans, you just increase that. So the more people that, you know, the virus is bouncing around in, that just increases the likelihood that there could be some new variant that pops out, maybe that's like SARS-3,
oof,
the return.
I was going to say earlier, it's, when you said, yeah, SARS-2, all I can think of anytime anybody says part two, I just think of Lost in New York. So I just add that all the time when people are saying there's a sequel coming out. And I'm like, Dune 2, Lost in New York? Makes no sense. But
Godfather 2. Yeah.
So next, we're moving on to your fun one. What is it? Crimean?
Yeah.
Is it Crimean or Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever?
I call it Crimean, okay, but I mean, I'm not very good at pronouncing anything, so
this one's a little.
I've heard Crimean.
This one's a little scarier to me. I feel like any of them that say hemorrhagic in them, I know hemorrhaging happens in other diseases too. It just sounds so much more gruesome. So
yeah, it's bleeding.
Yeah,
it's excessive bleeding. You basically go into shock and bleed to death from internal bleeding. You blood comes out of everywhere. It's gruesome. So Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever is actually caused by a tick. It's a tick-borne virus. It is known to be basically in a wide range of wild and domestic animals, such as cattle, sheep, and goats. These can act as hosts for the tick, with the virus transmitted to people by the tick bites or through directly coming into contact with, like, infected animal blood. So the animal hosts are where the virus kind of hangs out and, like, naturally replicates. It needs to get into humans through a little extra help from a tick. So the tick, you know, transports the virus. Human-to-human transmission can then occur, but only through close contact with bodily fluids of infected persons. So, like, you know, you can't sneeze it across the room to somebody. It has to be, like, you know,
direct contact,
open wound to open wound or something. Yeah. So just like a lot of these kind of scary diseases, it starts off just very vague in general with fever, dizziness, headache, nausea, vomiting, and even a little confusion, which is good. But after a couple of days, symptoms progress to lethargy, liver enlargement, severe rash, and then, of course, the hallmark bleeding from the mucous membranes. It has a case fatality rate of around 30%. So
not quite as bad as some others, but still pretty bad.
Yeah, a lot higher than COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So this disease is endemic in Africa, meaning it's just kind of part of the background noise of disease. The Balkans, the Middle East, and some Asian countries. But there is concern that a warming climate could extend the range of this tick species.
Yeah.
So
real quick, you know, Brett, I was just looking up because I live in Colorado, where we know there are, you know, instances, high instances of ticks. And we've already talked about possibly doing you know, an episode on Lyme disease and the other things that are going on, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, those kinds of things. But did you know that some tick species, and I wonder if this one could do this, and this is why it's even more terrifying, can live up to 540 days without a host. They'll just hang out and almost go dormant until they can find another host to cling on to. Others can go as long as 3 months without a host. And some can live for up to 2 years without a host. So, I mean, think about it right now. Brett is on his way to Africa. Someone gets in his bag, unbeknownst to Brett. He comes to visit me here in Colorado, walks through, you know, the little prayer we have over here. Bam. Tick falls, drops, grabs onto a nearby sheep or goat, and bam. Now we've got, you know, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever in Colorado. I mean, it sounds far-fetched. It sounds like, you know, arachnophobia. But honestly, like, it's...
Well, that's how this crap
It's
spreads.
Not that far-fetched.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, human movement of products and people is what moves around pathogens. So this is, as we said, a hemorrhagic fever that is like Ebola and Marburg, but it's, you know, and it's quite deadly. These diseases tend not to spread to, like, super large numbers of people because of that whole close contact thing, and also because it just kills too many people, so it, you know, burns itself out. So that's, you know, one that is a scary disease, but if, you know, unless it's airborne, I would say that's where I would be looking. So number three is the paramyxovirus. It is a family of single-stranded RNA viruses that basically pretty much infect vertebrates. There were a number of these different viruses that were once kind of common. The disease caused by subgroups included measles, mumps, parrot influenza, which I'm not actually sure what that is, respiratory syncytial virus, and henipavirus like Nipah and Hendra. So that's kind of a
scary group.
Gruesome, a motley crew. So this group of viruses have been plaguing humanity for a long time, eons even. Researchers actually still don't know exactly how they move into new species. The mutations they would need to become more transmissible, scientists also don't really know about that, or why these viruses produce only mild symptoms while others can be deadly. Like influenza and the coronaviruses, they spread quickly through the air, but are usually straightforward to vaccinate against, which is good, with the exception of Nipah, which is the most lethal of this group of viruses. This appeared in the 1990s in Malaysia from a bat population, and it kills between 45% to 75% of those infected. A more plausible group, I reckon. Then we got influenza, the
OG
gold standard. Yeah. This is, of course, a contagious respiratory illness, which is important, caused by the influenza virus. It infects the nose, throat, and sometimes the lungs, which can then lead to high fever, muscle and body aches, headaches, fatigue, etc. It's very, very unpleasant to have. I've had the flu a couple times, and it's just the worst. Just the pits. In healthy adults, it can be mild, but I guess mine didn't take that note. But it can also kill, and does kill, hundreds of thousands of people each year.
Yeah.
Which I don't know that people kind of realize that. We're so used to, like, you know, expecting the flu season every winter. It's just sort of like a fact of life, but it kills a lot of people.
Well, and that was the one of the things that they were saying, like, while we looked at other diseases that had actually taken a horrible turn, you know, things like diabetes, cancers, things like that, that killed more people during the pandemic because of the fact that they weren't being treated. The flu seasons were actually remarkably mild because of the mask wearing and reduced the numbers like dramatically. And they've now since gone up this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like an interesting kind of side story from the COVID stuff. So the flu viruses spread mainly from by these tiny droplets, airborne droplet nuclei, some call them, if you want to be cool about it. These are made when people with the flu cough, sneeze, or talk. I guess some people are spitters when they talk. You know, they just
close talkers too.
Mm-hmm. So these droplets can land in the mouths or noses of those nearby. Less often, a person might get the flu by touching a surface or some fomite-type object that has the flu virus on it, and then they would touch their own, you know, mouth, eyes, nose, whatever. But it is, you know, effective at spreading amongst humans widely and relatively quickly because of that airborne transmission. Each year, the flu virus mutates, and that's why you have to get new flu shots. There are multiple different variants of flu at any one time during a flu season. So usually when you get a flu shot, it's kind of like a mixed cocktail of different flu viruses. So the we know that, you know, there is historical precedent. Obviously, the 1918 Spanish influenza, which was a subtype called H1N1, led to a pandemic that killed upwards of 50 million people globally. And that's when the global population was a lot smaller than it is now. So adjusted for inflation, I don't know what that would be, but
probably about a billion. We'll put it.
Yeah, give or take. Yeah, we'll say that. So with this 1918 pandemic, the outbreak actually began with a milder form of the illness, but then it rapidly developed into more lethal forms. The H1N1 outbreak subsided after about 2 years, but we know it's not the end of deadly influenza outbreaks. There was another bad one in 1957 called the Asian flu, which was subtype H2N2. 1968 had the Hong Kong flu. This was an H3N2 strain, and it was descended from the H2N2 that caused the Asian flu. Each of these killed around 2 million people. So nothing to shake a stick at. But flu, certainly a possibility, and I would say a good one. Rift Valley fever coming in hot at number 5. This is another zoonotic disease carried by animals. It is transmitted to humans through skeeters, mosquitoes, and blood-feeding flies, which...
Sounds worse.
That's a thing.
Like, they're pretty much the same. Yeah. Like, you can say mosquito, and that's basically a blood-feeding fly, but when you say it like that, it sounds way worse.
Yeah, like, if you had to pick, like, someone was, like, forcing you, okay, you can be bitten by a mosquito or a blood-feeding fly. Like, I'm going mosquito.
10 out of 10.
Blood-feeding flies, that conjures up all kinds of nastiness. And mosquitoes are basically flying strangers. So, the kind of people that are most at risk of Rift Valley fever are those that come into, you know, close contact with infected animals. So if you're like butchering animals, you come into contact with blood or organs. If you ingest unpasteurized or uncooked milk from infected animals, so like herders, farmers, slaughterhouse workers, and even the humble veterinarian are most at risk. In humans, it can be mild flu-like illness, and it can be deadly and severe. So that's, you know, a nice range. The disease was once restricted to Africa. That's where it gets its name, from the Rift Valley. 2,000 cases were reported in Saudi Arabia and Yemen as well. And human-to-human transmission does not appear to occur yet. If these changes or the ticks that carry the disease spread to other areas because of climate change, Rift Valley could be a candidate for the next pandemic. So this is another example of how like climate change is increasing the risk of like pandemics and infectious disease outbreaks, because diseases that are spread from like vectors, ticks and mosquitoes and stuff, you know, those are very sensitive to the environment. They need like, you know, temperature to be a certain range, rainfall patterns to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is all shifting and changing globally. And so new areas are now that maybe once were too cold or didn't rain enough or rained too much or whatever, now are becoming more hospitable for these little bugs. And that just increases the surface area from which to strike. Coming in at number six, mm-hmm. Zika.
Yeah.
Z is for Zika.
Yep.
We've done
it. Exactly. It was called actually Z is for Zika.
Yeah.
And we actually, this is OG. This was put out, if you want to go check it out, we put it out January 2020. So that's how long we've been running this game. So just, you know.
Wow. And we're just scratching the surface, mm-hmm. people. We haven't even entered the Rubicon yet. I'm starting to talk conspiracy theory.
I know. Yeah, it's infectious. All I have to do is play one more clip and you're gonna drop out from being a professor and start writing YouTube tutorials about how to escape the pandemic.
Yeah, I'm just gonna be like a Joe Rogan experience groupie. Which that guy, I mean, man.
Billions.
So much potential. He has you know, some good interviews, some interesting people.
It started off so good. It's like a lot of things. I mean, it's even the Elon Musk theory. Yep. Like, start off with, you know, mm-hmm. good intentions. You're trying to bring awareness mm-hmm. to things and allow conversations. And then somebody who has a ton of money starts throwing it at you. And slowly your perception changes, yeah. you know, because that's what.
And yeah, you turn into a cartoon superhero.
Exactly.
That's just what happens, I guess. So Zika was first identified in Uganda in the Zika forest. I've actually seen the Zika forest. Very underwhelming because of deforestation. There's not much left of it. But the mosquito-borne virus that is Zika has spread from animals to humans, so it's zoonotic. The next pandemic will most likely come from animals. So it'll most likely be zoonotic, because about 75% of all the new viruses and pathogens and whatnot coming at us from animals come from animals. So most people that have historically been infected with Zika basically develop either no symptoms or really, really mild symptoms. What happened is it slowly circulated, spreading around the planet, kind of just nobody really cared because it didn't cause that much ruckus until it gets to South America and is started to correspond to these congenital malformations of infants, so babies born with microcephaly. That starts happening around the same time that they notice that this weird new virus is present. Mm-hmm. But Zika had never caused this kind of microcephaly before, and so they weren't looking for it, but they realized, like, okay, like, we're seeing this huge spike in microcephaly than what we normally see, and there's also this Zika thing going around. Could they be connected? Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, they were. So when a pregnant woman gets infected, bitten by a mosquito and infected with Zika, the risk of a congenital issue with the baby goes way up. The cases have declined since 2017. So when it first hit, it was, you know, causing a lot of panic. It was in the news, I remember a lot. And it still continues to this day, but at lower levels in regions where it is endemic. 89 countries and territories have reported evidence of mosquito-transmitted Zika, but we are not really kind of tracking it globally as much as other diseases. There's no specific treatment available for the Zika virus infection. I'm not sure. I guess I'm not sure why Zika would be on a list like this, other than it just caught it changed its stripes so dramatically and started causing these like strange mm-hmm. birth defect symptoms.
I wonder also if it's because it's being ignored and like people really don't recognize it as much. Could it quietly be circulating to a higher extent because people are less, you know, less cognizant of it? But yeah, it does seem like the outlier so far. While as a new dad, like it is terrifying to me to think that there could be an underlying disease that caused your child's, you know, to have congenital malformations without you having any conception of that happening whatsoever, is terrifying. Yeah. But yeah, it does not seem like it fits this like murderer's row we've got going on here.
Yeah. I mean, because it needs that mosquito to spread to humans, you know, it's just not as efficient at spreading fast as like airborne pathogens are. So number seven, Lassa fever. We got to do an episode on this one. It's another viral hemorrhagic illness. It's an acute viral hemorrhagic illness. So you just want to pinch its little cheeks. It is endemic in some countries of West Africa, such as Benin, Ghana, Guinea, Liberia, Mali, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria. I feel like I just sounded like that MIA
Yeah,
song.
I was just going to say the same thing. Yep. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Somalia, Dosnia.
Yep.
Okay. So although it is a viral hemorrhagic illness like Ebola or the Marburg, it actually has a much lower fatality rate than those diseases. However, in some areas of Sierra Leone and Liberia, between 10 and 16% of people admitted to hospitals every year have loss of fever. And so this means it seriously impacts people, healthcare systems, businesses in those areas. So it is capable of spreading far and wide. Lassa fever is transmitted through food or through household items that are contaminated with infected rodent urine or feces.
Yeah.
Person-to-person transmission can also occur through the secretions of an infected individual. So keep your secretions off of me.
Yeah.
People. Fatality rates among people hospitalized with severe cases of Lassa are around 15%. This one does have some antiviral drug treatment option, which has been used to successfully treat the disease. However, there is still the possibility that the disease could mutate into a more dangerous or drug-resistant form, which is, I assume, why it is on this list.
Yeah, I think like that's the tough part too, where you think you've got some of these diseases under control, but if you're just if it's not like we can use a vaccine to vaccine them away, you know, like we've seen certain diseases go completely off the radar, but this is just using an antiviral drug or an antibiotic. And so at any point in time, you know, too many people don't finish those antibiotics or antivirals or what have you, and bam, it becomes this super bug that continues to circulate. So
those are the diseases, the high priority pathogens that actually are known diseases. But then we're back to disease X, which is the number eight on that list.
I mean,
the placeholder.
Really, it should be 10, no?
Yeah. It's a Roman numeral joke. Good. All right. Let's pause for...
There we go. Oh, dad jokes in full form now. Yeah. That's just who I am now.
Oh, shit.
It's over.
You're going to start turning into that.
I apologize to everyone. For continuity's sake, I'm not going to delete that, even though I could. So just know that I am fully here for it and that I'll never steer you guys wrong, all you listeners out there. I'm not going to fake it, you know? We're going to be real on this podcast.
Yeah. What a weird symptom of having a child. It's just you just start coming up with these jokes, man. So let's talk about disease X a little more. The characteristics that we kind of generally ascribe to this placeholder disease. So these are definitely characteristics that would be likely. Again, not every pathogen can cause a pandemic. Very few actually do. There are way more viruses on the planet than you can shake a stick at, but not that many of them become pandemic. Because again, a lot has to go right for the virus to become the next COVID. But in general, a few things do need to be present for the potential future disease X. One, it is likely to be spread through respiration, so airborne, because that's just more efficient for a pathogen. Mm-hmm. So people talking, laughing, coughing, sneezing. Is that all the ways that people
I think so. I think that's pretty close.
Okay. All of this is hard for public health to intervene on. We saw evidence of this with COVID. And just getting people to like block that pathway is challenging enough. Because that clip you played at the very beginning, he was talking about something about how it was like a bacterial soaked something or other.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was referring to mask.
Which,
wearing.
Like, again, like you're only supposed to wear a mask for at maximum like 45 minutes at a time if it's like becoming saturated. So, yeah, sir, you shouldn't be wearing a cloth mask for 2 weeks. No, you should not. But
if anything becomes bacteria riddled, just throw
it
away.
He's like, yeah, it's really tough when I wear this shirt for 10 days straight and I just smell awful. Yeah. You're like, yeah.
What to do? What to do?
Continue.
So the disease X is also likely to be a virus, not a bacteria or fungus. Because one of the reasons is because of that mutation potential and the potential to produce new variants, and that keeps it out of reach of vaccines. Sometimes it makes diseases like HIV hard to or not yet curable. It is also likely to be something that could spill over from animals. So it is likely to be a viral zoonotic disease. But it could also be a human pathogen that develops new characteristics or changes genetics in such a way that make it more conducive to causing a pandemic. So let's not count that out. But if you had to put money on it, that would be a weird table game in Vegas. But I would say a respiratory viral zoonotic disease is what we're looking forward to with disease.
You need to get that on DraftKings, start getting them into the disease game and see what's going on.
Man, that might actually exist. I would check into that. And if it doesn't, that's our idea. You heard it first. We got to do it.
Copyright.
We're going to be making Joe Rogan money with that. And then we're going to become conspiracy theorists and it's going to come full
circle. Whatever gets the numbers up, right? Just sell your soul.
We're just going to be just doing anything for those 5 stars. And speaking of which, 5 stars on your listening platform. So where and when could disease X arise? COVID was like, called the 100-year pandemic because it was like 100 years after the last big shit show, 1918. I would be very surprised if we had to wait another 100 years. Because in all reality, it could be arising as we speak. The human species has always been infected by infectious disease pandemics in some form. There could be the first jump of a virus into a human population somewhere. And maybe 90% of the people who get it have some kind of common cold-like illness or what appears to be just good old garden variety pneumonia. And nobody tests for that. And it's able to stay under the radar long enough to spread and get its tentacles globally. It could arise anywhere, but there are some places that are more likely than others. There are places that you want to focus surveillance efforts on, for example. Specifically, if like I was given like a chunk of money and said, all right, you have to go like set up a disease surveillance network, where do you go? I would look to where there is like high contact rate between human and animal, or human and wildlife. Also where people are moving into new areas where there is high biodiversity and high microbial diversity.
Right. Would you consider there's some of the areas that are high in that, more human animal interaction, but take them into high traffic areas, i.e. maybe a rural area that is adjacent to a major city, maybe something that's like just a little ways out. Like, would that have a bearing on your perception of where you would go?
Yeah, I think that's an important one, because otherwise, you know, if it can't get to a major like transportation hub, if it can't get to like a human center and be able to spread, then it, you know, doesn't become a pandemic. So, you know, that's part of the ingredient, is it needs, you know, basically the human animal contact needs to happen within range of some relatively big transportation network. So people might think about places like Asia and Africa. So, you know, West Africa is experiencing, you know, has a lot of rainforest. It's also experiencing a lot of deforestation. You mix that with the practice of bushmeat hunting and wildlife trafficking, and you have a lot of the ingredients, the viral soup, if mm-hmm. you will, because there's a lot of human animal interaction, and these are considered pandemic risk hotspots. COVID-19 came from one of these predicted hotspots where this kind of interaction was happening. If you look at a pre-COVID like risk map of pandemic hotspots, you know, the origins or the presumptive origins of COVID is right in one of those hotspots. But the last pandemic prior to COVID, the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, which, good Lord, seems like so long ago, that was in grad school. I was learning about that.
You're just a boy.
Originated, yeah, I was just a wee little epidemiologist, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to get my spirit crushed by the world. Originated in Mexico, which was not considered a hotspot. So that was a bit of a surprise. So it could come from, you know, other places. There are some places that are, you know, more likely. But we have to be open to the fact that it could come from any place where there are humans and any place where there are animals, which is basically most of the planet.
Well, and Brett, like to that point, the 1918 Spanish influenza was thought to have happened in the United States at a military base.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's, you know, there's places that it could happen that we are just completely ignorant to, or not really would be mm-hmm. on the radar either.
Yep. That's, again, why it is so infuriatingly stupid to, you know, call it the China virus or the Wuhan whatever,
yeah.
like to blame a place, because it could have come from other places. It just happened to be there. So
I mean, like, Brett, as we look at all this, so we've done a quick download of the conspiracy theories. We've looked at, you know, the heavy hitters on what, you know, mm-hmm. disease X could be, but really, like, how do you convince people that disease X is hypothetical, that like truly it's being used as a placeholder and it's really just an inform more than it's actually a disease? Like, how do you get that through to people?
Yeah. Well, part of the aforementioned spirit crushing is I don't know that we can get through to, you know, a chunk of the population. They're going to believe what they believe. But, you know, the concept of disease X is not, like, new. It's not, it wasn't invented in this 2024 World Economic Forum meeting. It's been around since, you know, at least 2018. It's already produced some results, some positive achievements. The companies BioNTech and Moderna had a SARS-CoV-2 vaccine candidate ready, like, very, very quickly, within days, because of the work that was already done in response to the MERS epidemic in the Arabian Peninsula. So basically they picked up on, because they had already been doing this work on other coronaviruses, and MERS is genetically similar, you know, they had a head mm-hmm. start. So that was part of it. Even though we didn't know SARS-2 would be a pandemic pathogen, people started to think that the coronavirus family was an important viral family to work in because of its ability to cause severe respiratory disease. And all of this sped up the vaccine considerably, and is one of the reasons why there was that, you know, there's a viral lab in the Wuhan area studying coronaviruses, but that's because coronaviruses occur in the animal populations around that
and
area.
There were some that had already happened there, like they'd already been in relatively like everywhere. So mm-hmm. yeah, really frustrating. I wish I feel like anytime you bring up, though, anything with pharma in it, immediately the knee-jerk reaction is, of course, you would say that instead of like, hey, this is a paper that was actually published in 2018. Like, how do you kind of come to grips with that? Like, you're showing a peer-reviewed article from 2019. Like, why do you think that's still a plandemic? And they're like, yeah, you would say that. And you're like, okay, cool. This is a conversation that's going nowhere. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. there's a lot of mental gymnastics involved. But, you know, the point of it, again, is to help with planning, preparedness, pandemic preparedness, planning. Most of that is kind of being spearheaded by the WHO and public health agencies like the CDC or the NIH. It also involves people from the United Nations, basically all levels of government, business organizations like the World Economic Forum, and it trickles down to the state and local health department levels, and even individual hospitals and health.
Every hospital has a contingency plan for a horrific outbreak, regardless of what the disease is. They have plans in place. Like, does that mean every hospital of all time has been in on the conspiracy of the fact that, you know, these diseases are going to be made by man? No, it means that they have to be ready, because if they become overrun, they have to have a contingency plan and a backup hospital and all those fun things. So, like, has nothing to do with, you know, planning out a pandemic ahead of time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I worked on one of those plans at a hospital in grad school in St. Louis. I worked on their pandemic preparedness plan. And yeah, it was because, you know, there's only so many ventilators to go around. And if you have this, like, surge in demand, you need to know, you need to be
prepared
for that.
What is your triage strategy? So, all of that.
Yeah. So we basically compared various past flu seasons from, like, mild up to severe, and including the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. And then we use that to kind of model different future possible scenarios. We didn't call it Disease X, but basically the same thing. Pretty cool, actually. It was interesting.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Until it actually happens and you have to make those triage decisions, you have to decide who gets the ventilator and who gets to die.
Yeah.
That was part of the plan. Yep. And
yeah, I was lucky. I worked in emergency medicine for a while, and I'd seen some pretty horrific crashes, things like that, where you have to do triage and stuff, but nothing where it was like, it was more very cut and dry triaging. Mm-hmm. Not that like, hey, this person has a 5% better, you know, survival rate, and making that sort of decision. I would not envy that to be that healthcare provider. So,
I guess that's the fairest way to do it, you know. And it's basically uses like a metric that like quantifies how well your body is doing, like your different organ systems and stuff. And it, you know, produces a score. It's called a SOFA score. And they use that to make those determinations rather than like being subjective. Like, I didn't like the hat that guy was wearing when he came in.
Yeah, for sure. Or, or even racial recognition, like all of that. Like, it can be completely.
Yeah, all that
so
stuff.
It does take that subjective nature out of it, which is fantastic. But so, I mean, Brett, when we look at, okay, now we're here. It's 2024. We're cruising. It's almost March now, which is insane to me. And
we're doing the totalitarian
tip-toe. Yeah, exactly, into the tulips. But how prepared do you think we are now, Brett? Like, if you had to put a number on it, a rating on it, if, you know, you had to say where we're at right now, what would be your guess?
So did COVID make us more prepared for disease X? Yeah. But are we really prepared? I would say no. We haven't solved capacity issues in hospitals or healthcare systems. Do we have domestic manufacturers of masks? No. Most of them have stopped manufacturing after COVID. Do we have a population that wants to embrace new technologies like vaccines and antivirals? Good Lord.
No.
No.
I mean, like, I think that's the biggest thing for me, Brett, where we talk about, like, are we more aware and should we know better now? Yes. are we taking everything we learned and actually learning from it? Or is it that old adage of those who, you know, do not learn from the past are doomed to repeat it? Like, I think we're closer to that end of the spectrum where this could happen another five times. And I don't see us immediately, you know, responding. I honestly think the death toll could be, you know, exponentially higher and we would still see the same chatter and, you know, disagreements that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, that's what COVID really opened my eyes to, is just how kind of fractured people's willingness to do pandemic, you know, mitigation stuff, just basic stuff like mask wearing, and the fact that we're still dithering about, you know, lab leak theories and this and that, pharmaceutical companies and nanoparticles and the totalitarian tiptoe that we're all taking. All that distracts from the reality that the future pandemic will most likely be a zoonotic spillover. We have a pretty good idea of roughly where that might happen. But rather than investing, you know, our efforts into that, people are still spinning their wheels, just, you know, talking about nonsense. I guess it's a lot easier to just hear it from Joe Rogan than to, you know, read the peer-reviewed literature that shows the proximal origins of SARS-2. Who wants to read all
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
I mean, I do.
So, but, I mean, Brett, we've talked about, like, you know, do we think we're more prepared? But what lessons from COVID-19, from the pandemic, could we apply to Disease X if we so choose?
So that would be probably the vaccine technologies that were developed and kind of revolutionized because of COVID, like the mRNA vaccine platforms and the ability to change the response times. This can all speed up vaccine development to less than a year, because usually, like, you know, vaccines have to go through all these clinical trials and there's a lot of red tape and it takes forever. You know, one positive thing that COVID did, you know, showcase was how fast we can kind of get our shit together and make a good vaccine, whether or not people are going to then dilly and dally
taking the vaccine,
you know, take it. But the fact that we were able to, like, you know, come up with this, you know, really good vaccine, and I read the original, you know, paper, the original research paper, and it was a very, you know, convincing set of results that, like, this thing really, really works well. And it does. But there are now groups dedicated to kind of making vaccine development even faster. There are groups that are now working on projects called 100 Days to Vaccine. And we saw programs like Operation Warp Speed.
Yep.
And I'm going to have to go rinse my mouth out with soap after this, but it is something Trump did not screw up.
No, it was a super, like, I think that's the one thing that I feel like is really difficult in looking at this new, this next election cycle that makes me laugh, is that all of these people who are like, oh, you know, Trump will come in and he'll stop all those, you know, all the plandemics and all the vaccine stuff and all of that. And I'm like, hey, he was an integral part in getting that done and making sure that the U.S. had the vaccine as early as possible. And that is legitimately in a thing that he created in Operation Warp Speed. So I think that's, it's a pretty funny thing to think about, because, you know, the people who generally, I will say generally, because not everyone, who don't believe in this vaccine and how, you know, if the vaccine is working properly, are those same people. So it's just a really funny juxtaposition if you were one of those individuals.
And a big part of that was basically, like, trying to reduce or eliminate the risk to pharmaceutical companies, because usually it takes a long time for a vaccine to come out, because, you know, you have to make sure that it's actually effective and safe. And it's a huge financial risk if you invest, you know, millions and millions of dollars in all these clinical trials and it ends up not being effective. So the government, like, basically underwrote that development process. Operation Warp Speed basically said the government will, you know, have your back regardless of if the vaccine bails or not during trials, so there's no risk to the companies.
Right. Do you think there's a chance where we saw with the vaccine development this past time around where countries were sharing information and sharing their science with one another in groups? Which, like, do you think that that would happen again, or do you think that was a one-off?
I think it would happen. It's part of a bigger trend of just more like open source, open access, like data is becoming more and more like freely and widely available. So like a lot of the curtain is being lifted on stuff like that. That's a good point. I think, you know, that is something that could get better, but countries siloing their information and stuff is hopefully not a future trend. Home testing that was slowly, it could have definitely been rolled out faster, but is now part of like our counteroffensive tool set in terms of, you know, allowing us to get a grip on who's infected and stuff. Without the home test kits and people being able to like know their infection status and like isolate themselves, that's helped a lot. And so that's another, I think, good lesson that we learned. Whether or not, you know, they do anything with it. But it is, so basically we did learn, you know, some things, develop some technology because of COVID, but socially, if I had to say yes or no, I don't think we're prepared for disease X. I think, again, like you said, we got off light with COVID. Mm-hmm. Like it could have been, it was like, had a big devastating impact, obviously, but like it could
so
have been
so much worse.
So much worse. Yeah.
I actually think we are further away socially from dealing with the pandemic now than we were then. Because if you remember that first 90 days or so, even the people who are now against it were preparing and dealing. You know, there was like, it was more the loud minority versus this now almost even, you know, it almost seems like an even number of people who are against versus for. And so now I think we have an uphill battle versus it was kind of flat back then. You know, people didn't know what to believe. Yeah. And now they've chosen to believe something else. And we all know cognitive dissonance and not wanting to, you know, move off that spot. So, I think, I'm hopeful, but I feel the same way, Brent. I don't think, I think the social norms and the societal, left, right, all that good stuff is going to make it really difficult for us to move forward and deal with disease X, whatever it might be. When it does come.
Yeah, like even just vaccine hesitation is still like a problem. I mean, that takes us full circle. Like to the beginning of this whole like disease X misinformation storm came partly because of these measles outbreaks that were happening. So people were like, oh, the government's giving us measles. But measles outbreaks directly correspond to areas that have lower vaccine uptake. Yeah. It's a direct association there. So... you know, it's not the WHO disease X, you know, wicked scientists plotting how they're going to control the sheeple. It's, people thinking they are experts because they watched some YouTube videos and listened to Joe Rogan and decided not to vaccinate based on no science. And we get measles outbreaks.
Exactly.
Because of it.
So,
but it's easier to blame the, it's not our fault. It's the government.
Yep.
It's just, it's easier to blame others for, you know, whatever. So, disease act.
We did it. I've had fun with this. I think, you know, going down the rabbit hole is a good time. It's terrifying, but also good to keep watch on and like what's trending now. So, actually do enjoy, you know, finding out what the other side thinks about, so that we can kind of counteract that if needed. But As always, if you like what you heard, please go like, subscribe, tell your friends, go hang out and talk about Disease X and how it's not actually a disease, but rather a placeholder. And maybe that'll win you some points with some real fun, cool cats out there. You can go check out our merch store. It's linked at all of our socials over at Viral Load Pod. If you want to send us a note or tell us how cool we are, and that you want a hat like Brett's new cool hat that he has, that
We're beta testing some future merch, which may include some of the stuff we talked about.
Exactly. So
I'm loving the totalitarian tiptoe.
For sure. We're going to make it happen. But thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks for stopping by and hanging out with us. I've learned a lot. We hope you did, too. And as always, I've been Eddie Pupa.
And I'm Brett Bales until the government tells me otherwise.
And we'll see you next time.
Tiptoeing through the totalitarian tulips.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that was good.
Start of game. What you heard is what you hearing. Listen, it's what you hearing. Listen. X gon' give it to you. Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop pop out and stainless steel. Go hard getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make the mother wonder if you get it. Damn right, can I do it again? Cause I am right, so I got to win. Break bread with the enemy. No matter how many cats I break bread with, I break who you send to me. You motherfucker never wanna know what your life saved. That's on a light day, I'm getting down, down. Like it said freeze, but won't be the one ending up on his knees. Please, if the only thing you can't steal was came out to play. Stay out my way, mother. First we gonna rock, then we gonna roll, then we let it pop.